Tonight's presenter is Elizabeth Fox. She is the Director of Education of Hidden Sparks. Through the Education Alliance at Brown University, she has designed workshops for teachers in all subject areas to deepen their understanding of reading processes. Elizabeth has also designed and taught a course in the teaching of reading for graduate students at Teachers College, Columbia University. Before Elizabeth starts, I also want to present tonight's technical facilitator, Betsy, who always does a fantastic job of keeping us on track. So, Elizabeth, the floor is now yours.
Thank you, Judith, and thank you so much for your warm welcome. And, Betsy, thank you as well for keeping everything running seamlessly. Both of you have done a fantastic job this whole year, and the program has really benefited from your wonderful work. So thank you so much. And thanks to all of you for taking time out of your evening to learn more about how we as parents can support our children as they develop as readers. As you all know, reading is an essential part of our children's academic and lifelong success. It's a foundational skill that they can build on for the rest of their lives. And so it's crucial that we do whatever we can to help them really incorporate reading into their lives. Since summer is about to begin, we're going to start the session by talking a little bit about why summer reading is important. And then we're going to go into what the difference is between learning how to read and becoming a reader. And I say that with a capital R because it really is different from just knowing how to read. We're going to talk a little bit about what a good reader is and then what you can do to encourage your children to read outside of school and in the summer and what to do if your child struggles with reading. So I hope that at the end of this session, you'll learn why developing an identity as a reader is important, what makes a good reader, and how you can encourage your children to read. We'll talk about encouraging babies, toddlers, early elementary, late elementary, and teenagers. And we'll also talk about how you can support a child who struggles with reading. So as we get started, I'd like to just point out that on average, not reading during the summer vacation creates an annual achievement gap of between 1 and 3 months in comparison with students who read over the summer. So that means that if your child doesn't do any reading over the summer, the chances are that when they go back to school, they're going to be reading about 1 to 3 months behind where they were in June. And the problem with this is that it doesn't just disappear. It accumulates over the years. So it's really important that our children find that reading is something that's valuable to do outside of school. So I'd like you to start by just writing in the chat room, a little bit about how you became a reader. If you identify yourself as a reader, what can you think about that from your past that really helped you become a real reader? I think that I really started to become a reader because of the roles they started to play in my life. It started when I was really young, when my mom would buy me golden key books from the grocery store. And I just loved those stories, even though I didn't know how to actually read. I enjoyed hearing them over and over again. So please go ahead and write in the chat room any memories you might have of becoming a reader. And then reading started to take on certain roles in my life. Sometimes it was a role. I remember one of the reasons I would read is I'd read on car trips because my brother and I were very territorial in the back seat, and so this was a way for me to just stay out of his way. And I really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed the social aspect of talking to my friends about books and so on. So does anyone have any memories that they have of becoming a reader? When you started, so someone is saying how when they got something to study, they became really interested in knowing. And that's a really great thing about becoming a reader, is that you find out that it extends your range of what you can know and become informed about. And these are the kinds of things we try to give to our students, our children, rather. So there's a difference, or I'm going to propose that there's a difference between learning how to read and becoming a capital R reader. So when you learn how to read, one of the first things you have to do is you have to figure out how books work. You have to know which is the front and which is the back. You have to know which part of the page to start on. You have to realize at some point that the world is filled with words, and that they're connected to sounds. After a while, you'll learn the alphabet. And if you're hearing lots of stories, you're going to start to become aware of the structure of stories. And if you have someone who's pointing at words as they read, you might start recognizing the connection between words and sounds. Some of us are lucky enough to crack the code, to have experiences where you really get it about words and how you can make sounds with them and how they can have meaning. Some people become really, really good readers without having that ease of cracking the code. In other words, the code is always there and, you know, it's a little bit of a mystery, but they can still enjoy becoming readers. One important part of learning how to read is that you start understanding what you're reading, and you detect your own reading mistakes so that you can self-correct. You kind of hear yourself. So when I talk about a capital R reader, what do I mean? And I'm going to rely on some research from a professor at Columbia University, Sheridan Blau, who did a great deal of work on what the qualities and habits are of highly literate readers. How might they be different from people who don't identify themselves as literate readers? So one of the most important capacity that a capital R reader has, is they have the capacity to sustain focused attention on what they're reading. That means that they're persistent. And even if a text is hard, they're going to keep at it. And they can identify that if there's something they need to find out or understand in what they're reading, that it's on them to keep doing it. It's not it's the way reading is to sometimes be difficult. It's not a problem with them. And they solve problems around that. Another really important characteristic of a reader is that they're willing to be temporarily lost and be comfortable with not understanding what they're reading. This is very difficult from someone who identifies as a struggling reader, because a struggling reader is more likely to think there's something wrong with them rather than think, oh, there's more that I have to dig, more that I have to understand. They're willing to reread more than once because they understand that reading is a process of understanding. It's not something that just happens. Very interestingly, they're able to tolerate failure, uncertainty, and contradiction while they're reading. So I can give a little bit of an example of this from my own life. I was in a reading seminar, and we had a article to read that was incredibly difficult for me. And I read the first page for 45 minutes and realized I understood maybe about 20% of it. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do with this? And I realized that what I needed to do was get some background knowledge so that I could understand just that basic stuff on the first page. So I never stopped and said, oh, I'm, you know, a complete failure. I can never do this. It was, I had enough of an identity as a reader to try and solve the problem. And that's one of the principal differences between a less skilled reader and one with a greater identity for reading. And they have a greater capacity for failure, which is almost seems paradoxical. Responding honestly to what you're reading is another characteristic. I have here an image of a page where the reader was really talking back to the author, agreeing, disagreeing, questioning, coming up with her own interpretations. It's a relationship to the book where it's more like a conversation than it is something that you're supposed to take in one way or another. But that involves a lot of risk, because if you propose a different reading of something, a different way of understanding something, then, you know, you need to back it up from the text, but then you're at risk of having other readers disagree with you. Now, if that is troubling to you, then, you know, you really need to go back and look at the text and make sure you can back up what you're saying. But you also, as a capital R reader, need to have a willingness to change your mind and entertain other perspectives. So this is an image here of the famous story of the blind man and the elephant, and each person is feeling a different part of the elephant. So one person is feeling the ears and feels like, oh, this isn't a carpet, that's what I'm feeling. Another is feeling the skin on the side and it feels like the bark of a tree. So he thinks that he's looking at a tree. And when you're reading a difficult text, you might have very, very different interpretations. And part of what a capital reader can do is entertain other perspectives and change their minds so that they can really increase their understanding and accept alternative readings. And that really expands their capacity as readers. Along with being okay with failure is the ability to monitor your understanding and make adjustments as you go. So in my example, I spent a long time on the first page and realized that my understanding was way, way low. And that's something that isn't necessarily a habit for everyone who actually reads. It might be that they start staring off into the out the window and not really even connect the fact that they're staring out the window because they stopped understanding what they were reading. So some people you'll see will just keep moving their finger even when they're not even thinking of what they're reading. So a capital R reader monitors their understanding. When a child thinks of herself as a reader, it's very likely that she'll read for pleasure and have many different reasons for reading. So I'd like you to take a moment while I'm talking and just jot down some of the reasons that you have for reading. What are some of the ways that reading works in your life? So, and I'll just tell you some of my examples as you're coming up with your own. One of the reasons I'm asking you to do this is that if you're trying to help a young person develop an identity as a reader, then you're really going to need to help them figure out how it fits into their life, how it makes their life better. So I see that Judith says that it's a form of relaxation, which is really a great function of reading. You can just immerse yourself in the words and in the world of it. I find that I also use reading a lot for problem solving. So if there's something that I find very difficult, chances are I'll go out and find a book about it and try and read my way into some kind of solution. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Does anyone else have any ways that they use reading in their lives or roles that reading has for them? Well, keep thinking of it. I think you'll find that as you go through your day and notice when you read, you'll be finding more reasons that, more roles that reading plays in your life. So I think the biggest typical misconception about quote unquote good readers, and this is something that most people who struggle with reading would think, is that a good reader is just born that way. It comes easily to them, and there's really nothing you can do if it doesn't come to you easily. And it's true that some people kind of crack the code quicker than other people do, but it's also true that reading is sometimes difficult for anyone, no matter how much they read. So, for example, I would find it extremely difficult to read a law text or a circular from the Internal Revenue Service. So I think it's very important to let children know that although some people have an easier time of reading, there's always time when reading is going to take effort. And even skillful readers have texts that are difficult to them. So I'm going to give you an example of just such a thing. So bear with me here. So what I'd like you to do is read the sentence below and raise your hand in the chat room if you think you know what the sentence means. And I think you'll either know or not know. So the sentence is, the difficulty of your set could be increased if you do a jam followed by a peach. Now, there aren't really any difficult words in there, but they're certainly being used in a very strange way. Does anyone have any idea what this means? Okay. I didn't either the first time I saw it. It got translated for me, and what it means is that if you're a gymnast and you're on the uneven bars, the bars that have a high bar and a low one, you can increase your score and the value of your routine if you do a sequence where you do a jam, which means that you end up sitting on the high bar, and you follow that with a peach, where you move from the high bar to the low bar. So that's a jam and a peach. And if you do those two together, then you end up with extra points. Now, that's the sort of thing that a person with specialized knowledge can read totally easily, and the rest of us had a really hard time with. And it's important to remember that there are lots of ways in which something could be difficult to read, and it's not necessarily our fault that it's difficult. So what can you do to encourage your children to become capital R readers? Well, the most important thing is to give them opportunities to see you reading. If they see that this is something you do in your life, then they're going to be kind of curious about it, perhaps, but they'll see that it's a normal thing for people to do. The other is to really make sure you have a print-rich home. By that I mean, instead of just keeping the books on in a special place, make sure there's stuff to read all over the house, especially where your kids tend to hang out. So if it's a playroom or around the television set or the dinner table, wherever they do their homework, make sure there's magazines, newspapers, little pamphlets, books, all kinds of stuff that they can pick up and read if they happen to have an interest in doing so. One thing that is often very encouraging for students, for young people, is to realize that not all books are precious things that you have to, wash your hands before you read. It's good for your children to have some books around that they can write in, that they, if they're babies, they can chew on, and it's not going to really matter. And they can really own these books themselves. So it's great if you can talk to your children about what you've read and about what they're reading. Children who have difficulties with expressive language might find that difficult, but they might enjoy listening to you at least. Go to the bookstore or to the library together regularly and make it a treat. Make it a nice outing with your children. Make sure they can see you reading for pleasure, not just to learn something or for work. And above all, always have something with you to read. So if you're waiting for a bus or something, you can pull out something to read, and your children see how reading works in life. So it may seem odd, but we know now that babies learn language by being held and cared for by adults who repeat words to them. So even though it doesn't seem like a baby could understand anything, they're actually learning an enormous amount from snuggling up with you with the book that you look at together. Now, it's true, they may just pick it up and start chewing on it, and that's okay. But in there somewhere, they're starting to get words into their minds. They're starting to see how books work, what sides up, how pages are turning. So let them play with books made of cloth or boards. Talk to your baby and make reading a regular part of your daily routine. So you can sing songs or read stories over and over again. And make sure that your baby or a child of any age connects reading with what she loves the most, which is being with you or with an older sibling. That's the biggest reward possible for a child. So some of the things that you can do while changing diapers: you can sing songs, repeat nursery rhymes, play peekaboo, and respond to her needs with nice, soothing words. And you can take advantage of everyday moments to talk about the world around you. You can tell stories in the bath or in the stroller and name the world as you're going through it. And the babies need to hear your voice to learn about the things that she's seeing in the world. You don't have to use baby language. You can just use your regular language, whatever's comfortable for you to use. They'll pick it up, and they'll pick up the ideas. With toddlers, anyone who's been the parent of a toddler knows that they like to keep moving. So don't expect them necessarily to sit still for a book as these two are doing. Or if they do, don't expect them to stay very long. So keep the reading short with simple books and keep rereading them. You'll probably get tired of them way before they do. Choose books that have interesting illustrations and then recite rhymes and sing songs. All of that stuff really helps them get the language into their minds. And one great thing to do if you've read a book repeatedly is to intentionally make a mistake and see if your toddler will catch you. They delight in catching you make a mistake, and it's a great way to just make it really fun for them. And one great thing to do is to listen to your child talk and encourage her to say more. And if she has difficulty with talking, model it and give her, help her out with some language. If she's searching for a word, suggest a few alternatives and let her pick which one might be best. The most important thing is to make a special time for reading every single day. So it's part of your routine. It could be before bedtime. It could be while riding the bus, whatever works in your life consistently. And the other is to make sure that you have writing implements around, crayons, paper, so that your toddler can start scribbling and talking to you about the story or picture that they've created. Now, with preschoolers, in addition to reading every day, it's really important to read with expression so that they can get a sense of the inner voice that can come out of the page and be interactive with them. When you see that the child has lost interest, just stop. Don't worry about it. Come back to it later, maybe. And again, read your child's favorite books over and over again. If you see, you can go around the world naming things. Look at that bus. Those are the wheels. You might start singing the song, Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round. And this can make the connection between words and ideas and the sounds they make, and eventually the connection to the print. It's wonderful to have your child pretend read the parts she's memorized. And, you know, just encourage her to say more. Not thrilling her, not forcing her, but just encouraging. And, of course, you know, if you talk about letters and sounds or play letter-finding games like I see a B or I see something that makes a B sound, that can help your child make an association between the symbols that are words, the sounds, and objects around them. Most of all, link books you read with your child to the people, places, and things your child knows. Now, with early readers, they're going to be starting to perhaps read independently, and this can be a very tricky time because this could be the time when your child starts to find it is more difficult for them to learn to read than it is for some other children that they see around them or in school. So this makes it even more important to keep reading a part of your life, keep playing sound games, keep reading your child's book over and over, keep the writing materials around so that they can start creating their own books. Play with puppets to act out what's going on in a book, and connect reading with life so that they can really see how it can be important to them. Rereading is a really great thing for students, for young people to be able to do. And listen to your child read aloud and tell you stories. Now, with elementary school readers, it's really great to connect books with the feelings of closeness that you can have with your family. So you can tell family stories. It might be that some of the older siblings create books around family stories, even stories about when the children were even younger. And these can be things that they can read either themselves or to younger siblings. Definitely try to make it possible for your children to read to each other and show them how to use a dictionary, partly because that lets them know that even we don't know every word there is, and partly to let them know how they can get more words and find out what they mean if they don't know them. Another important thing to do is to help your child learn how to choose books. So the most important thing, of course, is that they pick things that they're interested in when they're reading independently. But also it's helpful if they know if they can have a way of knowing whether a book is going to be frustrating or not. So one simple way of doing this is to have them read a page in the book that they're interested in. And for every time they come up against a word that they don't know, if they, mark that with a finger, once they come to five fingers and if they haven't finished that whole page, that book is probably going to be a challenging book for them. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't try to read it. It might be that you read it together with them and that maybe you read a page and they read a page and you talk about it in between to support their understanding as they go. Or it could be that it would just be too frustrating for them. And they'll know that. They'll know that, in fullness of time, they'll be able to read it later. If there are only five things that they find confusing or difficult, that's probably a book that's just right for them. It's right at their instructional, at their level of reading. And so they can read it independently. Now, what if they don't use up any fingers? What if it's a really easy book and they know all the words? Fine. Don't worry about it. If they want to read a book that is easy for them to read, as long as they're not bored with it, it's fine because they're finding something interesting to it and they're making reading a part of their world. Another thing you can do as an adult is teach them the mind tricks of reading. So that would include things like showing your child how to summarize a story with a few sentences or how to make predictions, how to look at a book, the front cover, the back cover, and look at the chapter headings in the picture and start wondering, well, what do you think this book's about? All of that stuff helps readers understand what they're reading. And if it's a habit they get into, then it'll be much easier for them to read increasingly difficult books if they want to. Now, when we get to about sixth grade, middle school, high school, that's another period that's kind of dangerous for people, and they can stop identifying themselves as readers. So someone who might have really enjoyed reading books as a young person might suddenly find that the kind of reading they have to do in school is frustrating for them, and they stop thinking of themselves as a reader. So it's especially important to encourage preteens and teenagers to read books that are of interest to them. Help them think about reasons for reading and talk to them about their reading identity. Like, I'm the kind of reader who likes to just start a little bit of a book, and I like to have about five books going at the same time so that I can read whatever I feel like reading. Someone else might be, I just start at the beginning and I go straight through and that's it. So have them really think about what their identity is as reader. And they can also write book reviews on Goodreads or on Amazon that's directed to other people their age. Another idea is to start a preteen book club. Because their interests can change very fast, it's really important to find out what they're interested in and help them find books that will satisfy their interest and their curiosity so they really make that connection with what they're reading. One thing that I think is especially hard, especially for parents of preteens and teenagers, is that in our lives with other parents, we can sometimes feel somewhat competitive about our children. So if so-and-so's kid is, reading some incredibly advanced college-level text, you might feel like you should be pushing your child to read, frustrating or more difficult texts. And it might be even disturbing if your kid happens to be reading something that's several grade levels below what they can actually do. And I think it's important here to really keep your eyes on the prize on this. We don't know what will happen to the kid who's reading the college level text. It could be that they will come to hate reading and avoid it at all costs. That would be a tragedy. If your kid is reading something a couple grade levels or even more below what their abilities are, and they're not bored, the chances are they're working on a very sophisticated problem of their own. And it might have to do with dealing with bullies or dealing with some social issues, some other social issues, or whatever it is. It's, you may not ever know, but if it's holding their interest, don't worry about it, because in the long run, that's what's going to turn them into a capital R reader. In the meantime, you can encourage good study habits and talk to your children about news in the community and whatever is going on in the life around them. So here are some things to avoid doing at any age. If your child is reading aloud and makes a mistake that doesn't interfere with their understanding, don't make them correct it. Just let them keep moving. Don't interrupt them while they're reading, ever. And don't worry about how fast or slow they're reading. Instead, model how to read expressively. Above all, don't laugh at their mistakes or their efforts. Nothing can destroy their identity as a reader than being mocked for a normal process of making mistakes. And if they're struggling with reading, don't say things like, oh, you know this, you're just being lazy. If they're struggling, chances are it's a real struggle and they need support. Kids don't go around trying to shirk their work just because. It's usually because they don't have the skills to be able to do it. And don't say, oh, this is too easy for you. That's a baby book. Because you don't really know what they're getting out of it. And it might be a very sophisticated idea that you learn about much later. So just let them read whatever is of interest to them. So what do you do if your child struggles with reading? Well, there are a lot of different ways that you can respond to a discouraged reader. If they say something like, I'll never learn to read, then they might be trying to tell you that they feel really alone in their struggle with reading. And they just don't see the progress that they make, even if they're working really, really hard. And they might really feel like giving up. So the thing to do is to really empathize with their struggle and let them know that a lot of people struggle with reading. And you can even give examples from your own life of things that were difficult for you to read that you kept on with and ended up being able to read after a while. You can point out the tiny increments of progress that they've been able to make. Maybe they're just able to sit with the book for a minute longer than they used to. That's progress, and it's really important to point out even those small moments of progress when you have someone who's feeling discouraged. One of the things that you can do is do some research on famous people who have worked through their reading difficulties, especially if there's someone in a field that your child is really interested in or looks up to. There are literally thousands of people who have overcome a struggle with reading and enjoy their lives as readers. Now, if your child says that reading is dumb, there are a couple different things they might be trying to tell you. They might be saying, look, I'm angry because this is such a struggle and I really don't like doing this. They might not see the point of having to work so hard to read, in which case it's really great for you to just show them the value, show them the kinds of things that can happen in their lives as a result of reading. And bring pleasurable reading into their life. The other is that they might just be bored with what they're given to read. It really might not be of any interest to them, and or it might be too easy for them. So if that's the case, you need to talk to them and find out what the case is. You know, if it's too easy for them, then find something more challenging. If it's of no interest, then, you know, you have a few different courses. You can make sure that they have lots of things in their lives that they're interested in reading. And you can also try and help them figure out what to do when you have to do something that you're not interested in. So I see one person has asked, shouldn't the schools gear reading material to students' interests? Well, I totally agree. I think that schools that have classroom libraries with a wide range of different kinds of books at different levels really help our children become capital R readers. Not all schools have the resources for that. And even if they do, what you do at home really has a huge impact on your child as a reader. So regardless of what your school can or can't do, you can really have a lot of influence on your child as they become a reader. Does that address your question, Mrs. Rubenstein? Okay, thank you. So there are a lot of different reasons why a person might be struggling with reading, and I'm just going to go through a couple of them. One is that language is really central to reading, of course. So in order to comprehend what you read, you have to be able to understand and use language. So this is called language processing ability, and it includes both receptive language, what you hear, and expressive language, what you're able to say correctly. So it might also involve auditory memory and being able to remember what's heard. So people can have difficulties at any number of these points. Your kid might say, oh, it's hard to explain what happened in school today. And you might notice that they avoid summarizing a conversation or a book. That may indicate that they have difficulty with expressive language. And it may be that if you play some games with them that have to do with categorizing so that they can have more words at ready, or if you provide them with some prompts that you can help them with that over time. You need to be patient regardless of what you try. Another important aspect of reading is memory. So there are three different kinds of memory that could be involved in reading. One is short-term memory, just being able to get information into your mind at all. The other is working memory. So in this case, your child might say, well, I can't figure out what cat would be if I changed the first letter to H. That might indicate a working memory problem because they can't keep cat and the idea of H and take that C away and put the H in there in their working memory. This would be indicated if you find that your child has a hard time repeating strings of numbers and letters. While they're reading, it can be really hard for them to remember all the characters or what the situation is if they have difficulties with working memory. Obviously, with long-term memory, they might not remember things that they've read about in the past that could help them understand something that they're reading now. Attention has a lot to do with reading. A child must be able to focus their attention in order to decode words and maintain reading fluency and understand what's read. So if a child starts reading a book and then starts looking out the window, they may forget where they were or just discard the book entirely, or be distracted so often that it's hard for them to keep the meaning in their minds. So you may notice that your child seems a little spaced out or shows some inconsistency in schoolwork. These are just the tip of the iceberg. There's so many different ways that so many different things that could be interfering with your child's ability to read easily, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't read at all. And it's often more than one thing that is an issue. So it's something to really pay attention to and observe your child. Now, the heading of this one may seem paradoxical to some people. It says, becoming a reader is one of the best ways to learn how to read. Now, most of the time we think that you have to learn how to read before you can become, you know, a capital R reader. But in fact, it can go either way. So someone who really feels that reading is important in their life, who identifies as a reader, is going to be able to work through those struggles and get to the rewards of reading. So the thing that you can do is really identify your child's strengths and identify their interests and use them to find out what kind of reading material is going to keep them interested and active. And make sure you have plenty of that around. I'm seeing that someone just said that audio tapes are a good tool for short attention span or frustration in reading. Absolutely. It's really great to take some of the load off the working memory or the attention span so that your child can really get a grip on what they're reading. And also give your child an opportunity to talk about how they feel and recast what they tell you so that they can see hope in the future. That this is something that's true of the moment, but it's not going to be true forever. That with persistence, they will be able to enjoy reading. And you can even talk to them about the ways that you've struggled in the past and succeeded. The most important thing is that regardless of whether your child has become a reader and needs to learn how to read, or whether they know how to read and haven't really taken on that identity as reader, it's important not to judge or criticize your child. Who wants to do something that you get judged or criticized for? That's something you avoid. You go away from. So the thing to do is to talk about books, see them as part of an active communication, and just let go of the small stuff, because it's the big picture stuff that's the most important. And it's also great to show them how you struggle with something. Like, find something that is hard for you to read and show them how you deal with it. So that they understand that it's the text and not themselves that's the problem. So one of the great things to do over the summer is to find lots of opportunities to encourage your family and your children to read during the summer. So I'd like to invite you to tell everyone here, what kinds of things does your family do to encourage your children to read? What are some of the, maybe there's some special summertime activities you do, or things that you've found have really worked in your family for encouraging your children to read. The research shows that in middle school, reading 4 or 5 books over the summer has so much of a positive impact that in the fall, their reading levels are the same as if they went to summer school the whole summer. That's just 4 or 5 books. Oh, yeah, fun series, the Zach Files and the Andrew Law series. That's great, especially for boys who don't necessarily see themselves in a lot of books. And keeping a log of books and rating them and switching books, comparing reviews, that way they can tell their friends which are good books and find out from their friends which are good books. And it really brings in the whole social aspect of reading, which is really terrific. Summer reading programs in the library are fabulous. Sometimes they'll have book discussion groups. Sometimes they'll have an author come. There are all kinds of things they can do. And to follow up on Mrs. Rubenstein's previous suggestion, if you're on a long car trip, you can have audio tapes of books playing. And if you have lots of kids in the car, then they can take turns selecting which tapes they get to listen to. Other things you can do is let your kids stay up a half hour later if they're reading books. So that gets to be kind of a little treat and a privilege. And try to listen to your child or find some time to read with your child every day. Just make it so that the reward of reading is partly having some contact with people they love, whether it's an older sibling or you or someone else that they feel very, very close to. And of course, combine activities with books. Go to the park or the playground and read books about summertime parks and playgrounds. And if, above all, make sure your kids get to see you reading. Again, keep your eyes on the prize. It's more important to develop your child's identity as a reader than it is to correct a short-term mistake. On our website, you'll find some more resources for developing readers and more information about milestones and so on. And you'll find it under resources and then click resources for reading. I also have these other resources. If you're raising a Jewish family with children from ages 6 months to somewhere between 5 and 8, your family is eligible to get a free book, and they'll send free books every month to your family. So you can sign up for it at PJ Library, and this is also on our website. Reading Rockets has great information for helping struggling readers. And also, it has a really great way of matching your child's interests with books that are at their reading level. So it's a really great way to find books that your kid might be interested in. The Jewish Book Council has resources for book clubs, book recommendations, and recorded Yiddish books. And the Yiddish Book Center has a large library of children's literature that is available for free online, and you can just download it and read it there. So with that, I'd like to know if anyone has any questions. I'll give you a moment or so to think of anything that you might be wondering about.
Elizabeth, while people are thinking about questions that they might want to ask, I just want to thank you for presenting such a broad topic. Like, you really took us from very young children through teenagers and really sort of looked at reading through multiple lenses, and really just a fantastic presentation with lots of depth and a lot to think about. So thank you so much. And I want to remind everyone of two things. You will be getting a survey that we ask you complete. It really does help us plan for the future. And all of these fantastic suggestions and insights that Elizabeth has brought to us, you can come back to it at any time on the Hidden Sparks website within about 24 hours, sometime tomorrow evening. It should be up on the Hidden Sparks website. If you go to www.hiddensparks.org, it is, the archives are on the right-hand side of the screen, and you can look at tonight's or any other webinar that has been posted there. Thank you to our partners and supporters who help Hidden Sparks continue the wonderful work in schools and reaching out beyond the school community in programs like the webinar you participated in tonight.